Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Arthur Brooks, the president of the American Enterprise Institute and author of the new best-selling book, The Conservative Heart, How to Build a Fairer, Happier, and More Prosperous America, joins us to talk about a number of things, but notably the coming debate of, well, virtually the entire Republican field in one piece or another, and whether the conservative heart will feature in that conversation. Arthur Brooks, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Frank. Wonderful to be with you.
So this book is getting a lot of attention, and properly so. It's a very thoughtful, very engaging way of looking at how conservatives can think about and discuss and, well, sell their program to people who are accustomed to thinking others have a better, more compassionate conservatism, or at least more compassionate heart. What is your take on how this is now being internalized by the Republicans, from whom we'll hear more tomorrow night?
It's a great question, and it's something I've given a lot of thought to. To begin with, a number of the candidates who will be up on stage tomorrow night in Cleveland have read the book, which is good, and I've discussed it with a lot of them, probably most of them, as a matter of fact. But we are in a very interesting moment in the way that this is playing out in presidential politics. This is something that happens very often in American presidential politics. There's a mischaracterization of what it means to be a leader insofar as presidential candidates will look at polls and ascertain the mood of the American public and reflect that as a matter of leadership. Well, that's not leadership. That's followership. Right now, Americans all over the country are frantic and frustrated and fearful and angry because of the lawlessness, because of the lack of foreign policy, because of the insecurity in our nation that's come from 7 years of the Obama administration. And when presidential candidates look at that and see the fear and frustration and anger, and they reflect that in an angry tone, when Republicans become the anger party to reflect the frustration of American conservatives, they're following. Now, this is a really big problem for conservatives, because I can guarantee you, Frank, if they persist, and any of them persist in doing this, they will lose in 2016. Now, you're the biggest expert I know on Ronald Reagan, and we both know that Ronald Reagan took the anger and the frustration and fear of the American public in the late 1970s and pivoted it to becoming the party of aspiration, and that's why he won. He looked at a better world, a world that was afraid of the Soviet Union, and made a better world that looked more free for everybody. He looked at the poverty and malaise in the United States and looked for a better country for all Americans, because he believed that everybody was an asset. And when I hear any presidential candidate say to disparage immigrants, to say that people he disagrees with are dummies, that people in the government are all incompetent, that's the anger party, and that party will lose.
Yeah. Surely there is a way to talk about this in a manner that bespeaks this conservative heart, this happy warriorhood, if you will, that you're approaching and recommending, that makes it clear that there are problems with immigrants, aliens coming here unlawfully, or coming here for the purpose of taking down our country, as I think there's no question some are. And yet not lump everybody into a rubric that is offensive to people that you don't want to sound ugly or heartless to. Have I got that right or not?
You're absolutely right. I think that everybody agrees, everybody who's thinking about it agrees, that legal immigration is not a problem for the United States. On the contrary, legal immigration is one of the great sources of strength for this country, and the reason that virtually everybody listening to us right now has had his or her family in this country. Illegal immigration is another matter. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody who's coming here illegally today shouldn't be able to come here legally, but we want more legal immigration that creates more strength for the country and is the basis on which we revitalize our society, and less illegal immigration. There are two ways to do it. Number one is to reform the high-skill immigration visa program so we can get more engineers, more scientists that we need in this country, and who, by the way, according to AEI research, create 5 jobs for every job that people get. Five Native American jobs, five Native-born American jobs. Now, all of this stuff is in the conservative heart for people who are interested. Then the second is to remember that even low-skilled people on a guest worker program would be less likely to be exploited and more likely to go home with the money that they want so they can be with their families, and we'll have less illegal immigration if we think about this right.
Yeah. As you look at the challenges facing this country, Arthur, are you concerned that what we're really seeing increasingly on offer from the other side, shall we say, is socialism, whether they actually will call it that or not? And how do you think a conservative can most succinctly, most powerfully say, that's not for us?
Yeah. What is really on offer? I mean, everything is a form of socialism that socializes goods and services that are where the means of production, et cetera, are owned by government and decided on their distribution by government. But really, we're going toward a more European-style social democratic model. And a lot of conservatives despair about this. They look at this and they say, how can you compete with free stuff? I mean, I've heard this all throughout my career. How do you compete with free stuff? And the answer is simple. You compete with free stuff with aspiration. That's how you do it. Now, in the conservative heart, there's case study after case study of talking to real poor people who've rebuilt their lives. I've spent a lot of time, and I continue to spend a lot of time, in communities of poverty talking to poor people. I don't care if they're Republicans or Democrats. I ask, what do you need? And listening to them, and all of this stuff is chronicled, you know, from homeless shelters in New York to actual slums in India that I'm walking around in this book, all chronicled in this book. And you never find people who say, I would prefer to have my kids see me get a welfare check as opposed to a paycheck. Nobody says it. Everybody wants to be a capitalist. People are just looking for an excuse to follow your and my ideological worldview, but you have to present it as a matter of optimism and joy and real advantage and say, I believe in you, and then be a warrior for their opportunity.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this the other day and hearing a lot about the argument that we now have to sort of genuflect in the other direction by talking about only Black Lives Matter, and not to get into a protracted conversation about race, but just to say, it does seem to me what you're saying, reduced to its essence, is not, you know, that Black Lives Matter or white lives or all lives for that matter, but your life matters. And I think you really have touched on the key piece of this that I certainly remember. You know a lot more knowledgeable people about Reagan than me, but I did find him to be an incredible inspiration at an early stage of my life for exactly what you say, that optimism, we can fix this and we know how to do it better than the other side. I commend you again for this terrific work, Arthur Brooks. Let me just ask you very quickly in closing, among the other things that you and your superb organization, the American Enterprise Institute, are doing, of course, is trying to protect us against bad foreign policies, national security policies, the insecurity that you've just eloquently described, the legacy of the Obama administration. In 30 seconds, how do you see the conservative heart applied to the Iran deal?
I see it with a jaundiced eye. The Iran deal is a bad deal. If you look at the work done by my colleague Danielle Pletka or Michael Rubin, they talk chapter and verse about what's the problem with this particular deal. It does not serve the Iranian people, with whom we should have common cause and total solidarity. That is to say, we are hostile to the Iranian regime, and we have, like Reagan, absolute solidarity with the Iranian people. This does not do this. This also doesn't keep the American people safe. If we are fighting for people and their security and their opportunity and their prosperity and a real sense of fairness going forward, we need to have a different kind of deal, if any deal at all, by that. Because remember, during the Cold War, there was no deal at all. And the only way that that's going to happen, and this is my last word as we go into the Cleveland debate, Republicans need to win elections. And to do that, they're going to have to make an aspirational case and expand their coalition.
Well said, as always. Dr. Arthur Brooks, thank you for joining us in this interesting forecast for the election more generally, but specifically the debate tomorrow night. Thanks for all you do with the American Enterprise Institute. And again, congratulations on the conservative heart. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.